Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm stand-up comedian James Mullinger and the co-founder of Edit Magazine. This is Mullinger Meets Canadians, the podcast where we meet Canadians who are making waves on the world stage. In this episode, I'll be speaking with a woman that I consider to be a true hero. Diani Blanco is a bona fide community legend who has triumphed over much adversity and become a hugely respected keynote speaker, activist, philanthropist, CEO and founder of Infino Group, host of an acclaimed podcast, while also being a single mother of two beautiful children. Born in the Dominican Republic, Diani moved to New Brunswick on the east coast of Canada at the age of 10. She spent much of her early years feeling out of place. From being bullied in school because of her skin colour and suffering physical abuse at home, Diani became suicidal in her early teens. At 15 years old, she was placed in the foster care system, and it was during this time that she found herself in an abusive relationship. Diani was determined to change her life around after becoming a mother for the first time at 19 years old. Sure enough, at 23, Diani created Infino Group, a non-profit organization dedicated to help teenagers who are going through dating abuse. She traveled to high schools across New Brunswick as an inspirational speaker and shared her story to educate teens and encourage them to speak up. After losing everything in a fire in August 2019 and having nowhere else to go with her two children, she felt defeated and became depressed. But like a true leader, she rose up and just a few months later co-founded the Queens of Heart organization in the early days of the global pandemic to offer food and support to single parents to ensure that no family was left behind. So when I heard that Diani Blanco was now running to be a councillor on Moncton City Council in the New Brunswick elections this May, I knew we had to have her on this show. Even as her national and global recognition builds and her demand as a speaker grows, her focus is still on her chosen home city of Moncton. So I want to hear more about how she found light in such dark days and her passion for her community. So here we go. So Diani, you are a keynote speaker, an activist, a philanthropist, an advocate against dating abuse, as well as the CEO and founder of Infino Group. You're a mother of two. You do so many things. How do you describe yourself when people ask you, what do you do?
Like a hot mess, let's say. I do describe myself as a hot mess, but I feel like all the women totally understand and they can see themselves in what I'm feeling that way. But I feel like it's just like, I see myself as somebody that wants to inspire others. So that's pretty much who I am.
Amazing. I mean, you do seem to juggle a lot of different things. How do you find the time? And can you describe to me what a typical day looks like for you?
Ooh. Well, I'm a youth worker, but I work night shifts. So from 8 at night to 8 in the morning. So a day will be driving from work to home, dropping my oldest at school, having my youngest Nico with me, getting ready for deliveries for Queens of Heart, trying to get at least a nap with my youngest in the middle of that chaos. Then, I go back to work and it's like the same routine. And you have like Zoom calls, you have meetings, and you have events that you were asked to be a speaker. So it's a lot, but at the same time, I feel like it's who I am. I don't like just not doing anything.
Right.
I like to push myself. I love to get out of my comfort zone. So that's totally me.
Wow. I mean, you inspire so many people. And the first time that you and I met in person was last September at Punchlines Comedy Club, which pretty much felt like the only normal night out last year amidst all of the madness. But you are one of the only people I know who decided to spend your 2020 rather than complaining. You went out to help others. Can you tell me a bit about that and what drives you, and also about the creation of Queens of Heart, which, of course, I mean, really came into its own last year when you helped so many people?
Yes. Well, Queens of Heart started literally in my heart a long time ago. Mm-hmm. In 2019, we lost everything in a fire. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I was so lost. I didn't know where to go, who to ask for help. As a single mother, I didn't have many people. So I remember just being at a hotel for a few days and having friends and coworkers and total stranger getting together and having like a GoFundMe, and like Katie Dwyer, she sold her painting and donated the money to me and my kids. It was like, wow, all those people coming together and just literally helping a total stranger and her two kids. Hmm. And I was so inspired. I was really crying the whole time. Mm-hmm. And for months I was very depressed, even though I got a new duplex, people were like donating furnitures, but I was very depressed because I felt like I didn't do anything to deserve that. Mm-hmm. And it was really a hard time because as a single mom, I started from scratch, and losing everything suddenly was like the worst thing for me. Even if I'm not a materialistic person, it was really hard.
And, of course.
When the pandemic started, I was like, you know, it's like a way for me to give back to all those people who took the time, the money, the resources to help me and the boys. It's like a way of saying thank you to the community that got together and helped me and my boys to be where we are today.
Wow. I mean, it really is so incredible how you are one of the only people I know that can turn such terrible experiences into positive things. I mean, is that something that you think that you've had to learn because of struggles that you've been through in life? And how is it that you're able to put on a brave face and turn negatives in life into positive and beautiful things?
That's really interesting question. Well, growing up, I definitely felt disconnected from people around. As a young age, like, my mother, she was really cold with me, and I was seeing my siblings being loved and having all that attention. So I always felt like I wanted to help others. I wanted to make others laugh because I didn't want them to feel the same way that I was feeling. Right. So that was the thing that I was doing growing up. And every bad situation, I was trying to tell myself, it's okay, Diani, because somebody else is going through something way worse than you. So suck it up. We can do this. Just move forward. Just realize at least you're lucky that you're here. So every day I was trying to tell that to myself so I could pretty much survive.
Yeah.
And just, again, I was a type of like a young kid. And even now, I think it's still inside of me where I don't want anybody to feel the pain that I've been through. I want them to feel love. I want them to feel accepted. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I'm like that. Because of my journey, my experiences.
Yeah. I mean, it really is remarkable how you've managed to, as I say, you know, turn all of this into something where you help so many people. Am I right in thinking you were born in the Dominican Republic, but you moved, yes, to Canada when you were 10 years old? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Wonderful. What do you remember of your time in the Dominican before coming here?
It was rough. Mm-hmm. But I remember the good memories more. I tried to remember, I should say, the good memories of like being at the beach and running all over and playing, and the smell and the fruits and everything, like the good stuff, that having the community together and having like a huge barbecue and all the kids running around. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I do remember the bad ones. And that one is like the part that I try to forget, but I can't. It's still there. Where I was physically abused a lot. When I was 6 years old, my mom pretty much separated my siblings and I. So I stayed with her since I was the youngest, since she was struggling as a single mother, working three jobs. And she put me into a private school back home in Dominican Republic. And honestly, it was the worst thing ever. They were like, it was really hard because I was staying there. And every two weekends, I would go home to my mom. So I felt even more disconnected to my mother because I was just seeing her sometimes. And even if I was there in that weekend, I wasn't seeing her much.
Right.
So I never really had that motherly love or relationship with her growing up in Dominican Republic at all. And it just continued when we came here.
Right. I mean, that must have been obviously extremely tough to be removed from her, but also to not feel a connection. And then moving to a different country when you're 10 is going to be hard enough anyway without all of that going on. I mean, how were things when you got to New Brunswick, and what were your first impressions of the place? And did moving to a new place improve your relationship with your mother at all?
Well, coming to New Brunswick, it was a culture shock for sure. Remember, it was in May 1st. And it was still cold. There was snow, but it was dirty snow. And I still remember like it was yesterday. I was like, is this what it was supposed to be? Like in the movies, it was like all nice and white. And it's disgusting. So I remember as a kid just being so confused. I'm like, okay, this is not what reality is, right? This is not snow. But but yeah, like even like my first snow in May was, I remember one morning it was snowing and I was like so excited and I ran outside in my PJs and I was like, okay, nope, this is cold. It wasn't the same thing as the movie where everybody's like laughing and jumping around. It was cold. So I don't like the cold. But, no, but just the people were really different. Of course, I was the only Black girl in school. So I was picked a lot. Like there was a lot of bullying happening because I was the only Black kid there. But I felt like when I moved there in Shediac, actually, I loved the fact that I was close to the beach. Because of course, I do have a love of the ocean. It's always been in me. So I was feeling okay that sometimes I was just walking and sitting there at the beach and just smelling the air. And it's almost like a little flashback from back home if I was closing my eyes. Mm. So I just love that feeling. I still love it now. But yeah, New Brunswick was totally different. And I was wondering like why New Brunswick, like, you know, they have like Montreal, Toronto. I was like learning about Vancouver and I was like, oh, Vancouver sounds really nice. I don't know why I'm here. But yeah, it was a total culture shock. People were different, a little bit more distant. Mm-hmm. So my relationship with my mom did not get better at all. It was actually worse as my mom did marry somebody and the relationship was really toxic, very, very toxic. And as a young kid, I was already seeing it, but there's nothing that I could have done to make my mom change her mind into staying with that person. Physical violence, verbal violence. It was really bad. It wasn't pretty to see. And I started to act up a little bit when people were bullying me. I was trying to act tough because I was bullied at school and then going home and just being abused. So it was like tough anywhere that I was going. I never felt safe or I never felt love. So then I became like suicidal. I remember at 13 years old going to school totally drunk. and just bragging about it, honestly. I was like, oh, I'm drunk. And and I remember like one of the kids were like, why are you drunk? I was like, oh, look at here in my backpack, I have beer, I have like rum. And yeah, I have my backpack was full of like booze in there. And the thing is, like, I got in trouble for that, of course.
Yeah.
But nobody took the time to ask me what was going on and why that happened.
Right.
And I didn't tell them that before going to school before I decided to get drunk at 13 years old and go to school, that my mom's husband literally busted my lip and I was bleeding for something so silly. And I felt really broken. And still, like, even till this day, every time I talk about it, like, I become so emotional because the pain is still there.
Of course. And I mean, it must have been just devastating to not have anywhere safe. I mean, lots of people might experience problems at school or have problems at home, but you would hope that they have the other place to go as a safe haven. But you had neither, which must have just, I mean, I can't even kind of fathom how you coped and again, how you kind of came out of all of this, such a strong person. And I know now, as an activist and as an advocate, what do you think the province could do better to A, help children who are being bullied in schools? What could the province have done more to help? Because again, as you also say, like, being the only person of color in your school, you should have had a network or something to protect you from what happened, but none of it was there, clearly.
Yeah, and it was oh my God, it was so hard. I remember being like outside with all the kids and they were like all playing, and suddenly you had like little group of kids, like 4 or 5, coming to me and bullying me. And sometimes I will on purpose walk by the teacher that was outside, just hoping that teacher would see me and realize what was going on, because I was literally trying to run away from those kids and nothing was ever done. I remember that at lunchtime, having kids bully me and me eating by myself, eating in the bathroom by myself because I was bullied. And nobody coming to help me. And the thing is, like, you can see it. And sometimes you have to just ask the kid. And if they don't talk to you right away, it's okay. They might have a hard time trusting people. And it takes time for any kid to know that they can trust you, right? And you have to have the patience. But yeah, like, for me, it was like... it was hard because when social development got involved, my first 2 social workers, I remember begging them not to bring me back when they finally started like taking me away from that house. And they will always have the same answer. We tried to keep family together. And I was crying and I was telling them, it's going to get worse if I go, don't bring me back. And every time it got worse. So I think listening to the kid is like the solution for this, because I feel, yes, I was strong. Yes, I attempted suicide a few times. Yes, I'm still here, thank God. But there's other kids that does the first time is their last time that they try, right? So it's really to listen to the kid and take the time to be there and be a voice. They don't have a voice right now. So be a voice for them.
And is that what you do? And how do you find the time to do this? I mean, I know I hear from so many people, how many people that you've helped. How do you find the time? And how can people that are listening to this engage more? And what can people do more? Because as you say, it's the listening and the act that is what will actually make a difference.
Yeah, I think for people listening right now, again, like I said, it's be there for them and be a support. The only person that was there and that kept me here is my social worker, Sophia Bell, my last social worker, I should say. She was always there for me. She was listening. If I needed somebody to listen to me, she believed in me. And every time she would tell me, Diani, you're going to do great things one day. So don't give up. I know you're listening to me. Even if I wasn't talking to her and acting like I didn't care, I was listening. And she would always tell me to be strong, that I'm going to do great things. And I think that really stuck in my heart. It was like acting like I didn't care, but caring a lot. She would tell me that she did love me. And it was hard for me to hear that from somebody that wasn't my mother.
Right.
And I was wondering all the time, like, why do you care? Why do you love me? Like, you're not my mom. My mom gave me away, so why do you care for me? And I hear that a lot as a youth worker. when I tell a kid I do care about you and I do care for your safety, and they say the same thing that I was saying. Why do you care?
Right.
So sometimes they just need one person to make it. So be that person for that kid.
Yeah. And I think for any of us that have been through anything traumatic in our lives, it often does come down to that one person. I mean, for me as a, you know, obviously have been lucky enough to not go through anything as close to what you've been through, but just from being bullied as a teenager and not seeing the future in life and not seeing that I could ever do anything. It was one teacher. It was one teacher that wanted to listen and make that difference. And as you rightly say, I mean, people often think that they can't make a difference, but they can. And I mean, I'm really, really fascinated by how you kind of transitioned and were able to kind of go from being, you know, I mean, you clearly have always been an incredibly strong person to get through all of the things that you've been through, but you probably didn't feel strong when you were going through them. When did the shift happen, when you kind of were able to come out of it and realize that you were able to turn all of these, you know, experiences into a way to help others and a way to engage with others?
So when I was in foster care, I met this young guy, and we started a relationship. It went really fast. So at the beginning, it was like verbal abuse, being unfaithful, blaming me for a situation that I didn't do anything, and escalating when I moved on my own when I was 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. He moved in with me without permission from my social worker. I was supposed to be by myself. And I was so scared to tell Sophie about him being in my apartment because I was scared of him. So he started physically abusing me. And then it went to sexually abusing me. And the excuse was always, well, you're my girlfriend. So, and every time that I try to have this will to speak up, he will just break it again and just tell me, like, you and what army is going to stop me? You have no family. Your mom gave you away. Your friends were my friends first. You have nobody. And it was true. He was right. I had nobody. I was on my own. And he was always abusing me and knowing that I was going to stay because I didn't have anybody. And after 5 years into this bad relationship that was just escalating so bad that I couldn't do it anymore, I was becoming again suicidal. And when I found my strength, and I have no idea where it came from, but I just decided to get out of that bad relationship. And when I had my first son, Elijah, again, I was becoming more depressed because I didn't talk to anybody about it. I kept everything inside. Like, I grew up, my mom telling me that you don't talk about your problems outside of home. So it was hard for me to speak out. It was hard for me to go for help. I didn't even know where to go from the beginning. So when I had Elijah, I was depressed. I was by myself. And I remember just looking at him when I was breastfeeding and just crying and telling myself, like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And he just looked at me and smiled just randomly. And I said, I can't do it. No, I can't kill myself. Like, he needs me. Like, God gave me this little gift for me to take care. And I'm never going to put him into that situation of not having a mother. So after the years going by, I felt like, okay, I was getting I was getting more. Oh my God, I'm getting upset. Sorry.
I know. No, please. And I completely understand. And thank you for sharing honestly, because this will, you know, make a difference to so many people listening. But also, I mean, especially also for your, you know, I love the fact that essentially it was motherhood that saved you. And you know, what it sounds like motherhood was the moment that this shift happened in you, where you were able to turn all of the terrible things from the past into a bright future for yourself.
100%. And like I said, like, for me, it was like getting more spiritual and, and realizing that the universe is doing all this for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember as a kid just asking to be this amazing woman. And I remember just just wishing to be this amazing woman and saying that one day I'll be that woman, and just hoping that I will go by that day and be able to grow into somebody that's going to help others. But when I had Elijah, it was like, I need to do something.
Yeah.
I didn't go through all of this for nothing. You know, like I said, I'm strong enough to go through it. But maybe there's a teenager somewhere, maybe there's a youth somewhere that needs me to share my story and to be strong for them.
Yeah.
You know, like for I can impact one person, just one, you know, and I know that they're going to make the difference, you know. But yeah, definitely motherhood was the part where I've realized that it's okay, Dionne. Like this is love. You know, I didn't know what love was before until I had my first son. And every little smile, every little giggles, every little steps, every little mess that was loving it. And I was like, okay, like, you know, like it was like a moment of this is why everything happened, because I can really cherish all those little moments. And now I can help somebody else.
Absolutely. And it's, I mean, it sounds like, you know, in addition to cherishing every moment of motherhood, you also, you know, you make use of every second of every day. And I mean, and you're still incredibly young considering how much you've done and how much you've achieved and how many, you know, lives you've changed. I mean, through everything from speaking to Queens of Heart. And I understand that now you are taking that a step farther and you are actually running for council, which again, I mean, hats off to you. I salute you for wanting to do more. Can you tell me a bit about the decision to run for council and what you have in store?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because everybody that I told them that I was running for council were like, I'm not surprised. But I was surprised of myself. Like everybody was like, oh my God, I'm doing something crazy. Remember when I told you? I was like, yeah, I'm doing something crazy.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm like, I'm running for council. And everybody's like, yeah, that's not crazy. I see you do that. And I'm like, okay, there's something to be said right there, right? If everybody sees it,
absolutely,
then it was meant to be.
Totally. When you told me, I wasn't surprised, but I was also hugely grateful, because at the end of the day, the world needs more people like you in positions like that. So when you told me, I just took it as like, you know, music to my ears, which is, I know how most people took it.
it was interesting because I said I had no interest ever before into politics. Honest, like I was like looking at politics and just having this picture of what it is already. Right. I was like, oh my God, it's just a bunch of people arguing to know who's going to be the boss, and nobody is actually caring about the people. And so that's how I was seeing politics before. There was no love for politics coming from me before. And
amazing.
But now it's like, it's totally shifted. It shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Now I see it as a way of helping others. And we see more women in politics now. And I feel like it's so important. Like I say, it's we do see things differently. We're more like mothers, right? It's like we want to help and not necessarily fix, but to empower and to grow things. That's what we do. We love to grow things.
That's true.
So I feel like now, seeing all those incredible women in politics and hearing and listening and just watching them go, I'm so inspired. And I feel like it wasn't inside of me for a long time. It's just, I needed to go through all the steps before getting where I am right now.
Well, I mean, it's hugely commendable, and you're absolutely right. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, people have been saying for years, you know, every time terrible things happen, people, myself included, would always say this wouldn't happen if women were running the world. And and it's just kind of funny that, I mean, all of the stereotypes and the misogynistic and patriarchal kind of insults that were leveled against women as to why they didn't have more positions of power over the decades and indeed centuries are actually the reverse. Like, there was the old argument that was always used. Then this was used back in the day when women weren't even allowed to vote. People would say, well, women are too emotional. And the reality is, I mean, that is not, women are far more, you know, clear-headed, level-headed. You know, if you want to talk about emotional, I show you a picture of Donald Trump. Rudy Giuliani, and it's interesting how this is definitely becoming something which people are more aware of. And I mean, for you, what are the things that you know, you've already seen how well received this decision is that you've made by people. What are the things that you hope to do, and what are the things that you hope to change? Because I know for you, you know, I know you love this province. I know you love the people in it, but you have experienced firsthand problems that people go through coming here. So what do you think you can do, and what can be improved here?
For Moncton, like you said, I do have a love for Moncton. It's incredible. I love our province a lot. I wouldn't see myself moving anymore from here. But I feel like we have a lot to do when it comes to racism, when it comes to bullying at school, like we were talking earlier. There's a lot that we need to change, but I feel like what I want to bring to Moncton, and I think that they will probably appreciate it, is the way that I want to bring the community together. It's already there, but we need to do more. We need to really realize, like, who's your neighbor, and help each other. Because when we say we're all in this together, but if you look at the people that we've been helping with Queens of Heart, it doesn't look like we're all in this together.
Yeah.
Right?
So you're so right.
Yeah. So all the people messaging, crying or asking for help because they can't send their kids to school because they don't have food to send their kids to school. This is not all in this together. We're not all, like, you know, it's not the same everywhere. So I think we need to be more equal. That's for sure. And I feel like, especially for single parents, we need to have more things. Like, as a single mother myself, I see that we need more resources. Right. And there's a lot of different things that for me, growing up in Dominican, where we were all about the community and the good memories for the kids. And I feel like I want to bring this to Moncton, activities for kids to open up their mind in different cultures. You know, we are the teachers to them, right? No kids is born, let's say, racist, if you want. No, every kid love everybody, you know? So I feel like if kids see the diversity that we have and that we're all the same, even if we come from different culture, even if we speak in a different language, we're all the same, you know? And that's one of the things that I do teach to my kids. And I hope that we can bring this to Moncton.
How was it that you were able to do all the things you did, but seemingly stay so positive? Because that's what always amazes me, is that some of us, you know, when we get angry about things, it comes out in anger. Whereas for you, it seems to what comes out is caringness and wanting to bring about change. How do you keep anger in check when clearly you must feel angry about things, but you always seem to manage to channel it into something positive? How do you deal with that psychologically?
I think it's just the way that I am. I do try to see the positive out of every situations. My friends do hate me when I'm like, everything happens for a reason. They're like, yes, Gianni, here we go. But it's true. Even when it's happening to me, it is, everything is happening for a reason. But I think now it's giving to others. And the reason why I keep being so positive is because every family that we helped, I see the smile on their face. And it's just like, is the most amazing thing you can do, is to share what you have with others, right? Yeah. Just to see the smile on the kid's face when you drop a box with food and then you have a little treat there for them, you know, and it's so beautiful and so nice to see. I remember last year, there was this mother who messaged me, and she was stuck. She got hurt and she couldn't move much out of bed. So her two sons were the ones coming out to help me with the groceries. And they were so grateful. They were so grateful that I cried. The youngest was like, "Oh my God, all of that?" And I was like, "Yes, and you have a little surprise in there for you." And every time they were taking a bag or a box, they were just saying thank you the whole time. They were just like, thank you so much. And I was like, no, thank you. And the kid was like, oh, hopefully one day we can do the same. And I said, of course, you can do anything you want. And he just had this big smile on his face, and just that was it. But at that moment, I just sat in my car and I cried because people don't see that part, right? If you go on our Facebook page, on the group, you see all the people who have donated, the time that we do deliveries, how many deliveries we've done. They don't see the love and gratefulness that they have, right? So that keeps me really positive that I'm impacting somebody's life who one day is going to impact somebody else's life. And I always said, you know, I had this person actually always questioning why this person got fired or why this happened or why do they need food and don't they have social assistance or they have enough money? There was always questions coming in when any family needed help. They never experienced hunger, right? They never experienced not sending their kids to school because they don't have food in the fridge for them, right? They always have that money. They have a nice car. They have a nice house. They travel a lot. So they never, even when there were kids, their parents never struggled, right? And again, that's a privilege to have that. And not everybody have it. But when it comes to giving, like I said, giving is not a choice, right? It's it's our duty to do that as human beings. It's not a choice. And I tell that to my kids. Giving is not a choice. It's a duty of being a human being. We're here. We're supposed to be helping one another, no matter what. And it was really interesting to see that people sometimes don't have that empathy to see that somebody else might be struggling no matter what. You know, even if you're on social assistance, even if you work, you never know. Tomorrow I can lose my job, right? Yeah. Am I going to struggle? Yes. Can I be stuck and not have much food for my kids? Yes. You never know what's going to happen tomorrow, right? So that's the thing that I always said. Like when I lost everything, I didn't have anything and I was good before, but then I had nothing. And I didn't know that was going to happen. So I feel like I'm always so positive in trying to see the good side of everything because I know that I'm good today and I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And by helping people, it brings me so much joy. And at the same time, you never know if that kid one day will be the one helping me. Right? Maybe I'm going to inspire one kid who's going to make a difference in this world. And I'm going to need their help.
Yeah. Well, you've definitely inspired more than one kid. I mean, you've inspired hundreds, which is remarkable. Given how old are you now, Diana, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 27.
27. I mean, again, you've achieved so much in that time and been through so much. And one of the times I saw you speak, you said something so beautiful about how we can all make a difference no matter how painful our journey was, just to always believe in yourself and that only in darkness can we see light. And that's one of those many things that you've said that really stuck with me. And I commend you for the fact that you're inspiring everyone from children who are the leaders of tomorrow to the leaders of now. And I couldn't be happier that you two are, in addition to being a kind of a leader in the community, are now going to become a leader in council too. And the world needs more people like you, quite frankly.
Thank you.
Can I ask how people who are listening, who are feeling inspired and want to help, how can they support you with your campaign? How can they get behind Queens of Heart? And what can people do to engage with? I mean, what you're doing is a movement. Like, there's no two ways about it. This is a movement, and it's making a difference. And what can people do to get behind this movement?
Well, for my campaign, we're definitely going to have a GoFundMe that's going to help pay for everything else that's going to be needed for me running for council, like that pamphlets, the posters, everything. So the GoFundMe is going to be there for that. So if they want to support me with the campaign, they can donate there, or they can be a sponsor for sure. That would be nice. For great. Queens of Heart, and I feel like Queens of Heart is my number one, I would say. It's like having my third baby, you know? So for Queens of Heart, I totally encourage people to go to our group. Even if it's like $20 or small box of like cereal, you know, peanut butter, it doesn't matter. Sometimes you think that it's not enough, but it's just enough for somebody, right? Yeah. It's just anything helps. So they can donate, or they can be a volunteer to help us out and spread the love and the care here in the Greater Moncton. But yeah, I feel like if you're listening right now and you want to help, you can. Right, and there's always a way that you can help, and it feels amazing. I had a few people Christmas time, we had like this big like food and toy drive, and it was like amazing. I loved it. I obviously cried. Obviously I did.
That's good. It's good. Passion. There's nothing wrong with passion.
Passion had to like come out somewhere, you know. So yeah. I had to cry.
Well, you're emotionally invested in it, so it's inevitable. And it's
yes, like it's just when I'm so passionate in love with something, it just I got emotional because everybody was amazing in the community. All the toys, all the food for the families. We helped over 100 kids, and that was like amazing. I had an amazing time. I was totally tired, but I had an amazing time. And my kids were there helping me, and I had other like volunteers coming over and just like driving all over Greater Moncton and dropping all the toys and the food and all the messages that we had for feedback was amazing. They said, Diani, this is like the best feeling ever. I want to do this again, right? There was like companies that were like, oh my God, Diani, this was amazing. Definitely put us on your list for next year. We want to be with you guys. Wow. We want to help again. So it was like this amazing thing of the community coming together and people getting that experience that I have every single day when I do a drop-off of seeing the smile in the family's face and see the kids all excited. It's amazing. So yeah, that's if you want to help, if you want to support, that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like you say, I mean, lots of people, you know, rightly, you know, support different charities around the world, and of course that, you know, everyone should absolutely do that and continue to do that, but there is no better feeling than the very direct thing of seeing the people that you're helping locally. And as you say, I mean, it's so it's grassroots and it's real and it's organic. And as you say, you know, a box of cereal might not be a big deal to one person, and it might be all they have to spare. But to someone else that has nothing at all in the cupboard, that box of cereal is quite literally life-saving.
Yes, for sure. Like we have this this mother of six daughters that we've been helping, and she's incredible. She went from social assistance to trying really hard to be back in helping the society and having a job and contributing to our economy, you know. And she said it was like the hardest thing to do. Doesn't make it easy when you have kids to get out of social assistance. And I think that's something that needs to change for sure, especially for people who want to be a great example for their kids and to be there for the community at the same time. But I remember the first time that I dropped a box to her, she messaged me and she said, Diani, she was crying. She said, I'm crying. This is incredible. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much. This is the first time in years and years that we got was a pork roast, just a roast. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like a huge roast. Mm-hmm. It was just a simple, nice roast. That's it. And she was so emotional because she got that. And I was there, sitting there, and just questioning what's wrong with what, like, what's wrong here? There's something wrong. I have a pork roast in my freezer that I forgot that I had it there, right? And I didn't see it as something amazing. I didn't see it as something so special until she told me that. So sometimes we take for granted things, and I think we need to appreciate more what we have, and we have to share what we have with others so we can appreciate who we are and what we're doing right in this life.
Absolutely. Such wise words. And I can't thank you enough, Diani, for not just sharing your time with us this morning and taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with me, but also for everything you do for this community and indeed the world, because you're right. Every single person that you touch has the potential to make a difference. And all of the children in the world that look up to you right now are the leaders of tomorrow, and you really are making a difference, and you will continue to do so. And I can't thank you enough for your friendship.
Thank you.
We will speak again soon and see each other soon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Starter.
Thank you for listening to Mullinger Meets Canadians. If you like greatness, creativity, being inspired, laughing, or just love Canada as much as I do, then this is the podcast for you. So please do subscribe and review the show now. To learn more about Diani and her incredible journey, visit her website, dianiblanco.com, or find her on Facebook under Diani Blanco. Further details can be found on the Edit website, maritimeedit.com, and I will see you next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.